morning. Thank you for joining me today. My name is Gail Sylvia, host of SylviaGlobal.com. We have landed in Colorado with Dr. Douglas Jackson, who currently serves as the president of Project Cure. Project Cure is a registered trademark of the Benevolent Healthcare Foundation, and each year they deliver millions of dollars of donated medical relief into developing nations around the world. Since 1987, Project Cure has delivered equipment and supplies to incredibly needy people in more than 120 countries. Prior to his current position at Project Cure, Dr. Jackson was the provost for Colorado Christian University in Lakewood, Colorado. Dr. Douglas Jackson, thank you for joining me this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be on with you.
Really excited about the work that you're doing and the conversation that we're going to have today. I believe that the listeners around the world will reflect a combination of people, potential supporters and donors, but also people in countries that have actually benefited from the work of Project Cure. So thank you for being here.
Well, thanks. This is great.
Can you talk to us about the history? Your father was the original founder, correct?
That's right. And, you know, it's kind of a humble beginning. We started in 1987, so this is our 25th year. My dad was doing economic consulting around the world and ended up in Brazil, of all places, working with President Sarney at the time. And his interpreter was a medical student. And Lorena's mom would go out, she and her mother together, and do clinics in, like, these favela areas in the real poor parts of Brazil. And one day she took my dad to see what she was doing. And they went to see this doctor, and he was working in a clinic, and there was nothing in it. And that really changed the course of my dad's life. He didn't realize that there are very well-educated, well-trained medical professionals around the world who are trying to do things to help people, and they don't have any tools. And from that point on, my dad came back to Denver. He actually lives in a suburb up in the mountains called Evergreen. And he and my mom started collecting medical supplies. My pop had a friend of his that was in the medical wholesale business. And they started collecting medical supplies. And, you know, in 30 days, they had collected $50,000 worth of stuff and then got another $200,000 from other places. And anyway, shipped down there $250,000 of donated medical supplies. And that was 1987. And here we are today, still at it, working in more than 120 countries, shipping about 3 semi-truck trailers every week to these different places. And, yeah, it's gotten to be a very, very fun project, a little bigger than it was in my mom and dad's garage 25 years ago.
What was your involvement when they began?
Well, I was working on my PhD, and I was up at University of Colorado in Boulder, doing a PhD in finance and thinking I was going to go off to be a investment banker or a, you know, Wall Street trader, and that just didn't work out that way.
At what point did you get involved?
Well, I went back and I taught finance at the university for a while and went to San Diego and was watching my dad, and I built this thing, and he was spending up to 185, 190 days in a third world country every year. One of the things that makes Project Cure very distinct is that we do not do a project. We won't ship a container, a semi-truck trailer of medical supplies until one of us goes and actually looks at the project. We meet the doctors. We talk to the nurses. We make sure we can get the stuff through customs. So that's what my dad was doing. And I'm out there in San Diego teaching college and watching my pop do this. And I finally told him that I would help him. And we got a grant, and the grant was going to carry us through for about 6 months. And after that, I think, you know, we were all going to go do something different. I was just going to help my dad for a few months. So I've been running this now for 15 years.
Is your mother involved in the work of Project Cure?
Well, my mom's involved in a little bit of everything. She's great. She's a public school teacher that taught for 30 years. She opened her own academy for gifted education. She traveled around the world with my dad. She's very active in promoting, you know, Project Cure in the community. In fact, last week, the Colorado Women's Chamber of Commerce, she was a finalist for the Athena Award, which I was so proud of her because my mom is a very quiet, supportive individual, but very seldom ever gets recognized. And to get that kind of a recognition, it was just great.
Doug, congratulations on 20 of your mom's recognition and 25 years of dedication. We're glad that you caught the vision. What I'm also hearing you say is that your parents identified a need and then went about the step-by-step process of determining how they could fill the need. They didn't have all of the resources and the complete plan already in place, you know, when they started.
Yeah, in fact, you know, it's funny because my dad, not being a medical doctor, he kind of had to figure this out as he went. And there's sometimes in life when your greatest strength becomes your greatest weakness.
Mm.
And there's sometimes in life when your greatest weakness becomes your greatest strength.
Give us an example.
Well, the fact that my dad knew nothing about medical meant that he had to sit down with people and talk to them, talk to the doctors, ask the doctors, well, what exactly do you need? And what happened with that was that it put those doctors in that third world into a position of basically managing their own project. And that is so unusual because so many times people in the more developed world will sit down and say, okay, I have all the answers, and so I'm going to tell you what to do. Scoot over. We're going to do surgery in your hospital. We're going to bring our team down, our equipment. We're going to do surgeries on these people, and then we're going to all leave and take our equipment and go home. And the fact that my dad didn't really understand medical made him ask a lot of questions. It forced him to go to these third world countries and to meet these doctors and to say, listen, you tell me what you need. And that has become such a hallmark of Project Cure now that it is that doctor in that hospital that really is ultimately responsible for taking care of the people that live in his community. And we're just here to help. And it's been an amazing thing. But, boy, there are times when our growth curve, our learning curve, is just almost vertical because we have to figure these things out. And now we have to learn how to do this in, you know, 130 countries.
One of the elements that I particularly admire about Project Cure, because I joined you on a trip to Belize, and we'll talk about that in a moment, is the level of respect that you and your team give to the people in the country, and that you put them in a position, as you just described, of being viewed as the leader and the source of their own change, affecting and impacting people in their communities by letting people in their communities see themselves in this higher capacity, you know, and that you come along with them as support, but not to garner all the recognition or to diminish their role and their value by being the great American, you know, that comes to their aid, but, you know, does this in a manner that's very respectful of the culture and the circumstances and the intelligence and the education and the needs of the people there within the country. And it sounds like this was woven into the thought processes when your dad sat down. It says a lot about your dad as well and your family when he sat down at the table to humble himself and say, you know, how do we do this? You know, you know, to ask,
right,
how do we help you? You know, how can we be of service? You know?
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, even back when I was doing my, I've got two doctors, got one in law and one in finance. And I remember having this conversation where this realization hit me. Really, the more things that you are exposed to, the more it teaches us that we really don't know much. And it's sort of a paradox that the more you learn, the more you realize that you really don't know anything. And,
right.
And that has been the case with Project Cure. I mean, I 2 weeks ago, I flew clear to the other end of the world in Vanuatu, which is a little group of islands off the coast of Fiji. And I met some doctors that are really doing some very incredible things. And I learned something about the high incidence of diabetes among the people in the South Pacific. And, you know, what they're doing on amputations. I learned about, you know, the fact that they don't really have the wherewithal to perform cesarean sections. And so they have a very low cesarean rate, but they have an extremely high rate of cerebral palsy. Well, these are things I didn't know. And I've been all over the world interviewing doctors and walking through hospitals and feel like I've got a pretty good handle on some issues of public policy, public health, and healthcare. And I'm standing there listening to these people thinking, man, that's something I had no idea. So I don't, in my opinion, Gail, I don't think that there's any reason for anybody in this world not to be a humble learner. I try to be. I know my dad was. And it's just part of what we do as people.
Talk to us some more about your recent trip. What? How do you... and how you identify the countries that you're going to be supporting?
Well, we have never decided on our own that we want to go somewhere. In other words, we have waited for an invitation. It's not like, you know, we woke up one morning and said, well, it's we've been in Angola, we've been in Burundi, we've been in Chad, we've been in Djibouti, Ethiopia, you know, let's find an F country because we're going down the list of countries in Africa. So we've not focused on something to say we have to be there. We've waited until some partner comes along and says, could you come help me? And that is a whole different way of doing things too. And so once we get that invitation, then we go in and do this assessment and make sure that we know what we're doing and that we trust our partners. Our average client, if you will, if you want to call them that, our average client works 12 hours a day and makes a dollar. And you think about what that means to somebody. And, you know, that old adage about there, but for the grace of God goeth I. I mean, why did I get born in the United States and not there? That could have been me. And it could have been my family that's walking for a mile to go get water. That could have been my mom, but it wasn't. And so, you know, you look at that and you start figuring out what really these people need. And that's kind of what this whole thing is all about.
So how did they find you? Did they? I know you've been around 25 years, but generally, how do the requests reach your desk?
I don't know. We've never advertised. We have never, you know, I mean, I get out and do a lot of public speaking and things like that. But there are days when I'm not sure how these people find us. We'll get an email or we get a phone call at the office or somebody gets on the website and leaves a note and says, hey, I'm doing a project in, you know, the middle of Burkina Faso, and I mean, who even knows where that is, unless you really know West African geography, but they're in the middle of Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso, and they send us a note and say, we got a hospital, and we really need help, could you come help us? And the answer is yes. Where these people find out about Project Cure, maybe it's word of mouth from, you know, a conference that they're attending somewhere. Maybe it's through a Rotary Club. Maybe it's a church. Maybe it's a, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Maybe it's an individual like me who went on a trip with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it seems like the work you do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's revolutionary. It's life-changing, and it's fun.
I've been with you twice, and you have had the First Ladies of Nations with you, the First Lady of Tanzania. And then I went with you on a trip to Belize. You invited me to come along and see exactly what you do and how it's different from the approaches used by other, you know, organizations. And
right.
We worked like some fools.
Yes, we did, didn't
you
we?
You were Oh, my goodness. You were sweating and caring, and we were washing and laughing, and everyone on that trip, everyone felt so honored to be in the presence of the people who needed, who had made this request, and to see people respond and genuinely come and roll up your sleeves and work. And then there was woven into that same trip, you know, some incredible opportunities to see the country, to relax, and to also meet with First Lady Kim Simpless Barr, and who we also know has been the official advocate for women and children in Belize, and for the fight against cancer, and has now recently made it known that she herself is battling cancer, and we know that we're going to fully recover because her presence and her smile and her spirit and her absolute commitment to the well-being of others is going to bless her and restore her health. But, you know, I say all of this is that how do you connect with the First Ladies and take it from that level of ambassadorship to, you know, carrying buckets of water and scrubbing floors and slinging paint?
Well, the First Ladies once was another one of those things that started as a kernel of a very good idea, but I don't think we really had any idea that it was going to be as big as it was. We got an award from Mrs. Saca, who was the First Lady in El Salvador. And the gentleman that went down to accept that award on the behalf of Project Cure, I said, well, invite her to Denver, because maybe there's a chance that she could come and there might be some people here that would like to meet her. And so he did, and she agreed to come. And we had hosted other people. We hosted President Paul Kagame when he was speaking about the 10th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide, and this was in 2004. In fact, it was almost 10 years exactly to the day that the genocide started that President Kagame was here in town as a guest of Project Cure. We had about 3,800 people come hear him speak at the University of Denver. Mm. And we'd had Janet Museveni, who's the First Lady of Uganda. She was here, and we had some other dignitaries. But this was going to be something different. So I talked to a doctor friend of mine, and he was going to underwrite some things at Project Cure, and they said, hey, let's change course. Let's use that money and invite 1,000 of our closest friends to lunch, and we're going to honor this First Lady. And that way anybody can come, because we didn't want somebody, let's say they were living here in Denver and their home country is El Salvador and now their First Lady is coming to speak, but they can't afford the, you know, $250 for a fancy black tie dinner. I wanted it to be accessible to everybody. So the lunch is free, and everybody kept telling me, they said, Doug, you're never going to get 1,000 people at a lunch. And they were right. We didn't. We had like 950. And that was our first time out the door with this. The next year, the consul general from Mexico called and said, hey, I want to have lunch. And we had lunch. And he said, would you ever consider doing that with Margarita Zavala, the wife of Felipe Calderon, and who's the president of Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, absolutely. That would just be so cool. So we did it. And that year, Miller Coors underwrote the lunch. And we ended up with 2,000 people. And that's when we knew we were kind of onto something. So we invited Kim Simpless Barro from Belize to come to Scottsdale. We have a big warehouse in Phoenix, and there's one in Houston and one in Nashville, and we have little warehouses scattered all over the United States. But we wanted to do something with the community there in the Phoenix-Scottsdale area. We had another 1,000 people come, and she was magnificent. She did a great job, talked about her passion for the children of Belize and for the women of Belize and the issues that they deal with. Do you know, in Belize right now, if you have a child who needs cancer treatment, they have to drive 13 hours in a bus to Mérida, Mexico, which is on the very far northern, northwestern tip of the Yucatan Peninsula. They have to drive all the way up there and get health care in that hospital from them, because there's no place for little kids to get cancer treatment in the entire country of Belize.
You know, I saw it. You know, I saw exactly what you're describing. I touched the faces of a couple of children there in the hospital where we were working, where that was the next step that the parents were going to have to take to save their child's life. And seeing their faces and being in their presence and seeing how you as the head and the leadership you provide over Project Cure were so gracious and humble, it made mopping floors and washing down walls and painting and putting those, watching the men put those, build that fence in that heat, seemed so minor. You know, it was so, it was such a very small expression of love and gratitude compared to what the parent and the child were having to do in order to save their lives, you know, their child's lives. It's hard to fathom in our country where we have so much and we still see people without, but to know that no matter where we are and what our circumstances are, we still have, can find a degree of gratitude within it. And that spirit of gratitude somehow seems to propel us forward in attracting people who will help us and knowing and getting access to, you know, resources that otherwise might miss us, you know, we might not be aware of. And I witnessed it. I did witness it in Belize, and I did witness the tremendous commitment that First Lady Simplis Barro has, you know, for the women and girls there. And you know, you've hosted these luncheons with other First Ladies whose passion for the people of their nations and the circumstances are run deeper than most of the public is ever aware of, which is the reason for us having this call and for Sylvia Global, you know, to get that, that message out and to perpetuate that cycle of goodness and to glean from the cycle of goodness best practices that we can apply in our own communities, in our own individual and family mindsets, and also expose us to more opportunities to serve around the world. How can the listeners support you?
Well, there's a number of things that they can do. You know, it's if they're in a city where Project Cure has operations, we'd love for them to get involved as volunteers. We would love to have them help underwrite the cost of getting the medical supplies and equipment overseas. I mean, they can do that for as little as $25 a month. That sends a box with about $500 of medical supplies overseas. They could travel like we did on one of our Philanthro travels, or if they'd like to go and actually do medical work, we've got a whole Cure Clinic program where we take doctors and nurses and medical professionals and some people like me, and we had one recently in Ghana where we saw 5,000 people who had never seen a doctor before, and they could get involved in doing that. We've got a really fun program now called Cure Kit for Kids, and this is a very similar to what Franklin Graham does with his Operation Christmas Child. But instead of toys, this is medical supplies. And this is it's a shoebox size container. And there's a list of things that moms all over the world need to take care of their kids. Neosporin and Band-Aids and Tylenol and things like that. And so families will go out to their local Walmart or whatever, and they fill this box up, and they put a $5 check in because it's about what it costs to ship that little shoebox to some mom overseas. And they could do that. That would be a really fun thing and a very easy way to get involved. In fact, when we were in Belize, you remember we handed out about 750 of those boxes to those little kids who came, right?
Very exciting.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was very, very exciting. And it was much appreciated. Who are some of your partners?
Well, we do a lot of work with, you know, different groups. Probably 50% of the work that we do right now is with large organizations, companies. There's a big gold mining company here in Denver called Newmont Mining, and we do a lot of work with them, because when they put a mine, for example, into Peru, all their employees are sick. There's no health care. And so it benefits the company to have healthy employees. It benefits the community to have a hospital that gets rebuilt. Shareholders are happy. The government's happy. The peoples who live in that community, their families are healthier. So we're doing a lot of work with organizations like Newmont, CH2M Hill, Seaboard, companies like that, some of the oil exploration companies like Marathon Oil. We do a lot of work with Rotary International. They're a great partner for Project Cure. We do quite a bit of work with various churches, with the Nazarene Church and the Baptist Church, the Catholic Church. And we do some work here in town with the Islamic Center and with some of the groups in Washington, D.C. So it's fun because every project that we do is really an amalgamation of different partnerships. We have a partner on the ground. We have partners here with almost, like in Denver and Phoenix and these other cities, every hospital in town is given product, Project Cure, we're shipping it over there. So it really is kind of a neat coming together of a lot of different people to make things happen.
You know, something that I just picked up from your comment is that there seem to be, and clarify this for me if I'm incorrect, it seems that when it comes to providing health care for families and their children, that breaks through or helps you to be able to penetrate political and religious and cultural barriers that might otherwise be obstacles entering these locations.
I think that's true. And I think that because, you know, it's funny. When I first started doing this with my dad, however many years, 15 years ago, if you would ask me then, what is it that you do? I would have said, we do healthcare in the developing world. And about 5 or 6 years into that, I had one of my board members who had owned a trucking company. And he said, you know, Doug, for all the good that you do God and country, he said, you're a trucking company. You pick things up at one location and you deliver them at another location. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking about that, and I went, yeah, okay, I guess he's kind of right. So we tried to learn everything that we could about trucking companies and model a lot of our operations after trucking companies. If you ask me today, what is it that you really do at its core? Part of it is healthcare. We're moving 3 semi-truck trailers of medical supplies and equipment all over the world every week. Part of it is something a lot more important, though. And I think that if you ask me today, I would tell you that we are human engineers. We're building bridges to get this group of people in touch with that group of people. There's something magic when you look on the TV and you watch what happens in some of these places. Most people that I know, their heart goes out, and they said, man, it's 2012. It is not right that a mom cannot take care of her baby in these countries. What am I going to do about it? And if you're sitting in a city like Denver, Colorado, other than writing a check and sending the money overseas and, you know, you're not really sure where it's going to go and some problems like that, other than doing that, there's not a lot that you can do until Project Cure comes along. And like when we had the issue in Haiti with the earthquake a couple of years ago, we had hundreds, literally hundreds of people coming in every day, donating things, bringing things to the people in Haiti. We set a whole area of our warehouse aside so that if you gave to Haiti, you knew that it wasn't going to go anywhere else in the world. And we could keep track of all of the, I mean, down to the box of Band-Aids. If you said you wanted it to go to Haiti, we got it to Haiti. We did 26 semi-truck trailers into Haiti. I mean, just immediately in response to that. But it was all done by people in the community. And they could come here and they could sort the product and they could put it in the container themselves, and we could get that stuff moved down there. And the neat thing is now is that we're seeing people on this side of the world who have relationships with people on that side of the world. We built a bridge to get somebody from here to there. We've got a team of doctors right now from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. This is not my city. I love Nashville. I don't live there. And this group of doctors, they run the Southern Joint Replacement Institute, and they work out of St. Thomas Hospital, Dr. Mike Christie has been on faculty at Vanderbilt, and great people, smart, and great surgeons. They came to Project Cure, and they said, we would like to find a place where we could go back again and again and again and establish a relationship and change the infrastructure of an entire community. So Project Cure suggested 4 or 5 places in Latin America. They have some travel restrictions because they're actually they replace knees every day in Nashville. And they said, you know, we can't really go and spend a week traveling to India or Africa or something. Find me a place in the Western Hemisphere. So we settled on the city of Veracruz, Mexico. Last year in the entire city of Veracruz, they had 3 total knee replacements performed total. Our deal was Project Cure would rebuild the hospital, put all of the anesthesia in, the tables, everything. Dr. Christie's group said, if you guys will do that, we will come down 2 times a year for the next 10 years to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll teach the doctors, and we'll teach the nurses, and we'll start a physical therapy program, and we'll scrub the residents in, and they can come and perform knee replacements with us together.
Mm-hmm.
So last October, I went down with the team. I did nothing except moral support and encouragement because I'm not a medical doctor. We replaced 10 people's knees in 2 days. And those people had come into that hospital crippled. You know, they make maybe $3,500 is the average wage in Mexico. A knee costs $4,500 just for the knee implant. We replaced knees in 10 of those people, and that following Thursday, they did surgery on Tuesday. Thursday, I watched an 82-year-old woman who had been crippled her entire life, and she walked out to her car, and her legs were as straight as mine.
Mm.
That was magic. Today, as we're doing this interview, that team is down in Veracruz again. They're going to do 25 more.
25?
25 in a city that had 3 done last year. We've done 35 of these already, so huge increase. But the magic of that is the relationship that's being created between people in Nashville, Tennessee, and people in Veracruz, Mexico, and that would not have happened any other way.
Dr. Douglas Jackson, president of Project Cure, thank you so very much for introducing our listeners to a portion of the incredible work that you do. They can find you and more information about internships, volunteerism, your wish list, and how to support Project Cure at www.projectcure.org. And they can hear this broadcast again via sylviaglobal.com or on iTunes under podcast Sylvia Global. When you go to sylviaglobal.com, click on Facebook and like us and share this important experience and message with your friends. Dr. Douglas Jackson, thank you again for being with me today on Sylvia Global.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on the show. What you're doing, Sylvia, or Gail, is...
I go by both.
I know you do. But anyway, thank you for what you're doing on this. I think it is just so important that you highlight what's happening around the world, and nobody's doing it better than you. So thank you very, very much.
I look forward to having you back on again with more conversation and providing as much support as possible to the work that you're doing around the world, around the globe.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.